I'm wrestling, you're not weak for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to episode number 90. Yeah, that's right, 90. We're only 10 from 100 of the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you, as always, by Defend Soap, Defend What You Have Built, and Dahlmer Mats. Tommy, you know, we wrote up a script, what we're going to talk about, but last night you texted me, you're kind of hot. We've had two huge decommits. I know you want to talk about this topic, so I'm just going to go ahead and give you the floor for as long as you want to rant for. Go for it, buddy.
I wouldn't. Yeah, you know, well, good to be on the show today, Ben, with you. It's always fun. Sorry I'm not on my Skype speakerphone. That's really nice. But at any rate, yeah, with the decommit things, you know, I think there's multiple discussions to be had over this whole process. And you and I have touched on it before. But, you know, I personally am not surprised that people decommit, because of the current landscape of the recruiting process.
Absolutely.
And I don't resent the guys for decommitting. But I really do hate the recruiting process, and how perhaps technology or just the focus on specialization in sports. When I say technology, I mean video review. And also people becoming more informed about schools quicker through communication.
That's not a bad thing, because that does help with transparency when you know, people are put on blast for doing whatever they're doing. That can't help.
Right, and so that's where the discussion goes. It helps in a lot of ways, but in many ways it gives people so much information, both on the coach's side about the athlete and the athlete's side about the school. Relationships can get formed sooner. Where the biggest reason, the crux of the problem for me, you know, has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that these young kids are being forced and coerced and making decisions, you know, freshman and sophomore year of high school.
Yes.
And I personally have a problem with that. And ironically, for many reasons, Ben, but ironically, I don't think, you know, I've talked to probably, I would say over 10 Division I coaches at major institutions, and let's say if the sample size is 10, it's about 10, I'd say about half of them are indifferent on recruiting at a young age, meaning that they don't, you know, they don't like it, they don't think it's great, you know, they just do what they do and go from there. And the other half think it's ridiculous, and they feel forced to do this because...
Yeah.
The market, so to speak, you know, you know, when you're in a supply and demand market, you know, and I think you are as a coach. Like,
absolutely,
hey,
you absolutely are, because if other people are, you know, I mean, say I'm morally opposed to the early process, right, Tommy, and you're not, and we're both coaches,
right?
And there's a bunch of kids, and you're freaking calling them and texting them, and I'm ignoring them because I'm morally opposed to recruiting early. Who are they going to sign with?
No doubt.
They're going to side with you. They're going to say, well, Coach Askren is actually morally opposed, and I like his stance, so I'm going to wait around.
Right. And
like,
that's why I hate presenting problems without a solution, but I feel like I'm kind of in that mood right now.
Isn't the solution to, you know, and it's obviously the NCAA would have to create legislation, which more legislation, fantastic. No, but wouldn't they just have to do away with the verbal commitment? Wouldn't that be the way to do it? Saying,
well, you
we don't recognize or honor.
You can't stop a kid.
Sure.
From approaching you can't stop a kid from approaching a private business, being a private media outlet.
Sure.
And saying, hey, screaming from the mountaintop, saying, hey, I'm going to Ohio State. You can't do that. You can't.
What if the NCAA stopped recognizing verbal commitments as meaning anything? I mean, or does the NCAA not? I guess they don't mean anything.
They don't recognize. And they do their best at making sure their coaches don't recognize it by saying they can't talk about it.
I'm gonna see what the NCAA says about verbal commitments.
To me, the NCAA, because I am, you know, quote, morally opposed to the early recruiting process.
Okay, hey, Tommy, I'm on the NCAA website, so can I just read you what they say?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, the NCAA says, this phrase is best used to describe a college-bound student athlete's commitment to a school before he or she signs, or is able to sign, a national letter of intent. A college-bound student athlete can announce a verbal commitment at any time. While verbal commitments have become very popular for both college-bound student athletes and coaches, this commitment is not binding on either the college-bound student athlete or the college or university. Only signing a letter, national letter of intent, accompanied by a financial and aid agreement is binding by both parties. So I guess they are kind of saying it's nothing, right?
They can't. Well, the other thing, too, is that as an athlete, you're not bound to the governance of the NCAA until you sign that letter of intent.
Yeah,
so if you're saying something prior to signing, the NCAA has no jurisdiction over what you're doing. And they certainly don't have any jurisdiction over the media outlets that kind of perpetuate and promote this process.
So when you say perpetuate and promote, are you saying that negative connotation, or are you just stating that as a fact?
I'm stating it as a fact.
Okay.
Because I don't like the process, but Ben, I'm a businessman. Yeah. I am not so naive. I am not so naive to think that the media, private business media entities, should be taking the moral high ground on news and reporting facts. I mean, these are facts. The kid wants. I don't blame him.
No,
I don't blame
him.
But I think. But I think that. But I do think that the media promotion of these commitments facilitates.
Well, I mean, promotes it though, because we get excited about it. You and I want to talk about this. I mean, Tommy, how many times on this podcast?
I'm saying.
We're the media, Tommy. We're the media.
We are the media, but here's the thing. I can talk out of both sides of my mouth on this because, the early commitment might actually be good for wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Because you and I are talking about it.
Yes.
But is it good for the kid? I don't think anybody would say yes. I don't think anybody in their right mind could say that it's good for a 15-year-old kid to feel pressure to make his college choice.
Yeah.
As opposed to when he's 17 or 18. You could say it's inconsequential. There's no way you could say that's a positive thing.
Sure. So, just you and I, how many times did we talk about Kirk LeVette? And then obviously then we discussed both sides, that it can't, why would he go to Minnesota if he's actually going to be a head coach because he's going to sit behind Gable?
Exactly. And then you get into the individual situations for each decommit, and I really don't have a problem with the decommit. I have a bigger problem with the early commit based on pressure or outside factors.
Yeah, Tommy, I think we just have to, as you know, and whether we're talking as media right now or whether we're just talking as two dudes who like to watch wrestling, I think people like us just need to. We need to, and I do this. Don't take the verbal commitment so seriously. It literally, the NCAA literally has stated, as I just read, it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. So don't take the verbal commit as the final word, because there's nothing there. And, it does drive me crazy that some of these adults who, try to really bash on little guys, kids, the 15, 16, 17-year-olds, for not being a man of their word. First of all, they're not men. They're not 18. But second of all, give me a break. You people who are criticizing these kids have never changed your mind. Like, you've never cheated on a girlfriend. Like, you've never broken up with a girlfriend. Like, you've never changed jobs. Like, give me an effing break. I mean,
here's the thing that blows. Here's the thing, Ben, and this is just the truth. These kids and their parents are in way over their head on this recruiting process.
Absolutely.
They are bluegills in shark infested waters. And I didn't mean that negatively about the coaches. I'm just saying
that's a good metaphor. Yes.
Yeah, they do this for a living. So they inherently, when it comes time to go left or right, they know when they should go left. They know all the nuances in the back roads and the alleyways on how to navigate through the recruiting process. And these kids and the parents are total freaking rookies.
And it is, so, the, and it is the coach's job to get this done, Tommy. It's the coach's job to get the best people on his roster because that freaking matters, and that's what's going to help him win, and that's what's going to help him earn more money. So this is the coach's job, right? So, you know, I just think, like, people have to stop whining about it too much. They have to recognize the fact that the verbal commitment actually means nothing, right? And that 15, 16, 17-year-old kids are bound to change their minds.
I know. But here's the funny thing, Ben. What? When you really think about it, these kids that commit early, and I would say over half of the kids that commit early feel pressure to do so. It's not because they're compelled to do it. And so I wish I could make a living consulting these recruits. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, and start like a consulting company. Because it's like, you guys have more chips than you think.
Yes.
And you can tell the coach, hey,
only the top ones, Tommy. I would say that maybe only with the best of the best. You know, like, and obviously
only the top ones are committing early.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Kirk LeVette and Whitlake, so obviously those guys are the top of the food chain.
They got the chips.
I think it's past even the best guys, you know, even the top, say, five. I think it's past those guys committing early. You know, because obviously college coaches know, hey, if I can get this guy, he's number nine, he's a solid guy, and I can get him for a decent amount of money, that's a great guy to have in the room.
I can agree. I think it's getting a little bit more murky, and you just keep pushing downward. I mean, my sister, who is a softball coach at the high school level, she said that there's girls taking unofficial visits in the eighth grade softball programs because, as you would imagine, Ben, in female sports, the female is more developed at a younger age.
Yeah.
So you can make assumptions even sooner.
Yes.
As a coach. And so I don't like it because and I haven't been able to finish my point. The biggest reason I don't like it is because as a parent, you either have to watch a 15-year-old child make a life choice and not intervene because it is their choice, which is wrong because they're not old enough to process it all, or you have to intervene, which is also unfortunate because you want it to be their choice.
Yeah.
So when I see these kids that are freshmen or sophomores committing, it's like, well, clearly you didn't make this decision independently. And if you did, you made it with an immature mind, and you aren't as informed as you could be 2 or 3 years from now. And so I just think that whole thing is very unfortunate. And if my kids are ever in a position to have the chips, then they're going to use them, and it's going to be like, you know what? I know that you said if I don't decide by spring of my sophomore year that the offer's off the table, but you know what? So be it. That's fine because if I'm still sweet in the fall of my senior year, guess what? You're going to find a way to still have it for me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to hang out.
If you were to verbal commit at that time, Tommy, and then you started sucking it up or you got hurt, it's not like that the university's bound to you, right?
Yeah, and that's been
that's the other thing.
Couldn't agree more.
That people don't.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So for all these adults talking about be a man, shut up. I mean, listen. I try to be as much of a man of my word as possible, Tommy. But that's not saying I've had no flaws in my life, right?
Hey Ben, you know what's funny too is when were you most likely to
when I was a kid?
You said
when I was
in high school. Not even when I was a kid, when I was in high school.
Sure.
Because my mind was literally growing at the fastest rate it could possibly grow.
Yeah.
Where I was also given responsibility and autonomy to make my own choices.
Yes.
So, in high school is when I wanted to take back most about what I said.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like,
agreed.
I wanted to take it back. I wanted to take it back more often in high school than any other point in my life.
Yeah. I mean, Tommy, so, I can go back to my high school thought process too is, there wasn't early recruiting, but I loved Arizona State and Iowa State was who I really liked when I was like, so I had the clothes, I had all that shit, you know, and I wasn't super heavily recruited at all, but you know, I bet if the landscape was different, you know, back then, like it was now, and Arizona State was pressing me, I probably would have committed, right? But then, you know, I went on my official visits my senior year because there wasn't any recruiting prior to that. And it just didn't feel right there. And Missouri was the one that felt right for me. And so then I would have, I would have obviously said, hey, man, this is just not the place for me. Or I would have been stupid and I would have, honored my commitment, been a man of my word, as some of these adults are saying, and had not as good of a 5 years as I would have at Missouri.
Right.
So
I'm with you. You know, and I think because of social media and because of all the, you know, multiple media channels that can promote not just wrestling but all sports.
Yeah.
I also do dislike the overall behavior from the kids about the recruiting process. Like in football, this happened. I'm very pleased to announce that I've been offered a scholarship at Seton Hall. You know, very, very, and then, like, I literally read things like, very pleased to announce my 72nd scholarship offer from Oregon. It's like, oh yeah, dude, you gotta follow it on football, because I'm an Ohio State football fan. So I think I follow one of the football media outlets, so they retweet all the kids that get offers from Ohio State. These guys are like tweeting out about their offers, and I just don't think that type of self promotion, you know, is good for anybody. So
sure.
I'm like part old school, part new school. But yeah, the whole decommit thing, especially when you look at the specific situation, like Kirk Leavitt. He committed first to Minnesota, which I didn't even know that. And even if he committed second, it's like,
doesn't matter.
His name's Daniel, right? It's like, Daniel.
Yep.
Daniel, you have to go somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Like, you have to, and it makes total perfect sense as to why he would uncommit.
And honestly, it doesn't make much sense for Minnesota to have one of those dudes with a full scholarship riding the pine.
No way. You know what they're doing, though, is they were probably, and if I was Brandon Agnew, I would just be
Olympic redshirt or something.
You know, hoping and praying that I could suck him to 97, but it's like when you watch him at Cadet Worlds, like, that ain't happening.
Yeah. Exactly.
He is not a 97 pounder.
Yeah.
And even if he could make 97, he shouldn't go 97. Because he's just gonna be better served, a better athlete, better wrestler at heavyweight. You know what I mean?
Agreed. And then so the other large decommit, maybe T-Boone Pickens was flying around in his plane throwing out suitcases of cash, but Travis Whitley decommitted from Penn State to Oklahoma State, which I have no insight into. I have no idea what the deal is there or anything. So obviously, Oklahoma State was the huge beneficiary of these decommits recently.
You know, the other thing, too, and then we're getting kind of deep into the dynamic, but I don't blame the kids for decommitting. I don't think it's a big deal. But I think it's kind of weird in today's world that they actually don't even feel stupid about it. Like, if I had to decommit, if I had to go back on what I said, I'd at least feel like a little bit like a moron. You know what I mean? And I think in today's world, it's like, no, I just changed my mind. It is what it is. I mean, I did say I was going to spend the next 5 years of my life with this program, but now I think it's like almost like, you know, what's the big deal? And to me, it's like, it is kind of like, really? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. I think that's where we're at now. I think it's going to see, I think, can't really let it bother us, and obviously we're not big enough to make the NCAA change, or, and you know, we even outlined it, no. It is almost no way to make the outline, you know, the NCAA change, because they are high school athletes.
The other thing what's happened, Ben, is I think the coaches, I don't think, I know, I've talked to some coaches, I know that the coaches have become so calloused from early commitments and opposing coaches just pretending that didn't happen and continuing to recruit the athlete, that the coaches don't even really value the verbal commitment anymore either, and they'll just keep trying to get the kid to change his mind. So it's almost like, you know, 15 years ago, Ben, when a guy would verbally commit, it's almost like, you know, 99% of the wrestling coaches in the wrestling community would stand down and no longer call that kid. Well,
yeah.
I don't think that happens anymore. I don't think they stand down. I think
they
it's
don't.
Like, yeah, whatever. All you're telling me is that Penn State's in the lead. Right? That's all that tells me.
Yes, that's all
you know
it's
what I mean?
Telling
I'm
us.
I'm going to keep calling.
Yes.
So, interesting dynamics for sure.
Yes. Okay, so let's go. Let's go. NWCA All-Star. Man, Tommy, this ain't what it once was. You know, and I wasn't even that excited about it. There's a few good matches. And then when I watched it, they had two mats going on at the same time. It was kind of like, it just blah. I don't know. What did you think?
No, I thought the same thing. It felt a little bit like, you know, trying to do too much all at once. you know, trying to be as innovative as possible, trying to do multiple different things, especially with the multiple math. Didn't like that. And then the lineup was weak. I don't think the NWCA is accountable as you think they are to having a weak lineup.
Yeah.
But it was a weak lineup, and that didn't help things.
Why don't they just do away with this? I mean, I don't know. I feel like at one point it was a really cool event. In the last few years, it's really just dwindled down into, not that exciting.
Yeah, I would agree. I think a lot of it has to do with, again, technology. You know, watching super matchups and having them take place, you know, it's like, you know, at the end of the day, there's always five or six big matches every weekend, and I can go to Flow Wrestling and pretty much watch 80 to 90% of them, or the Big Ten Network. So there's so much coverage that the thought of one versus four, it's like, you know, that there's always a one versus four pretty much every weekend. And I don't think the coaches get into it as much anymore. You know, yeah, I mean, why don't they just do away? That's a good point. I mean, just do away with it.
Yeah, definitely. So we had three good matches, I thought. This is my opinion. Three that I was, you know, the Jack versus Meredith, it's a good match, but we've seen it seven times already. So I just can't be that excited about it.
Yep, I'm with you on that. So it was a good wrestling match, though.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. Cruz Piccinini, and you know, obviously, if you look at the scoreboard like I did before I watched it, and I said, "Wow, Piccinini kicked his butt!" Right, 8-5. And you watch the match, and it's really a one move thing, right? He cruises on top in the second, puts on a cradle, tries rolling it through, gets caught on his back, and it was a really bizarre scenario because he could have so easily just let go of the leg and given up a true reversal. The cradle, but refuses to let go of this cradle and gets held on his back forever. I don't know what he was doing.
Well, full transparency, it's the only one of the few All-Star matches I didn't watch, but what's interesting to me is that just everybody's reaction. First of all, Piccinini got the OW, I think, at the All-Star meet.
Yes.
And, Cruz is the defending national champion, but he wasn't like that until he won it.
Correct.
I basically think that the match we watched, there's nothing that happened that made me think any more or less about either guy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would agree with that statement.
I'm sorry, when watching the match, when reading the result. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like there's not much that made me think more or less about either guy.
Definitely. Not much happened in there. Second one that we really liked was Hall Valencia. What'd you think here?
Well, they're both awesome. I actually think that Valencia is just flat out a little bit better. So he's not flat out better, but I just give him the nod. You know, if they wrestled 10 times, I feel like I'd give Valencia the nod, seven of them.
Yeah, I mean, and that's obviously
he has a better attack rate.
Yes, that's what I was going to point out.
He's better, he's better in an even circumstance. You know, Mark Hall is a reactionary wrestler. He's very good at creating action off of somebody else's action.
100%.
And
you're taking all my points, Tommy. Everything I'm trying to say, you're
sorry,
saying.
Dude. Anyway, I just give anytime somebody can go get points, basically, you know, on command, or they always have a chance to score, it's like I'm going to give them the nod. And I feel stronger about Valencia in that regard than I do Hall.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. And obviously, last year when they wrestled in the semifinals, Tommy, we didn't really get to see who was better because it was decided by a headgear point, which I guess we got to see who had more integrity since Valencia was willing to go and pull a headgear to try to win. But I feel the same way as you. I feel like Valencia has a higher variety of attacks he can go to. You know, I think almost all of Mark Hall's offense comes off either, one, the other person's attacks, or two, the other person's pressure. You know, he really likes to get ducks and that kind of stuff. And you could even see in the last, I want to say he got the escape to go 3-2 with 20 left.
Right.
And every attack after that was a duck attempt, right? And Valencia just knows – by now he knows it's coming and he doesn't give the right amount of pressure that you need to get the ducks. And even – I want to say even the takedown that Valencia did get was off some kind of duck attempt where he kind of stepped back and blasted. And so, Mark Hall – and, you know, I'm being critical of Mark Hall, and obviously – NCAA champ, world champ. It's tough to be critical.
No,
but
he's, I mean, we're splitting hairs here, but that's what we do. That's what we do. And
yes.
So
if there is a hair to split, it's that he struggles to go get somebody, to go cover distance and go get them. I mean, and that's obviously,
yes,
that is a skill. And, you know, the better he gets, or, you know, on the world level also, the more people will study him and say, okay, I absolutely can't put pressure on this guy, and I have to finish clean when
especially,
I attack.
Especially when you get a lead. If you're lucky enough to get a lead on Mark Hall,
yeah,
you know, building on it, you know, is something that you should really assess, depending on your skills and where you're at in the match, because he's great at, I mean, he's very hard to score on, so getting points on him is
almost
hard
impossible
to come by. But
almost impossible to score.
Right. Yeah. So if you get a lead, though, I think, you know, you're in a good spot. At a really high level. I mean, if some random guy took him down with a stroke of luck, I mean, he's still going to get smashed. But you know what I'm talking about. Like a
yes.
guy like Valencia or even a Bo Jordan. It's
Bo
like,
Jordan,
hey,
and,
Bo,
and that's really our top three at this weight class. And as you mentioned,
right.
maybe we get to see, hopefully get to see Bo Jordan versus Valencia this weekend. But, yeah, those are the three in the mix. You're going to be there.
That I will be there, so I'll be able to assess the match for us on the podcast next week. But yeah, I think if you get a lead on, if one of those two guys get a lead on Mark Hall, you know, I wouldn't say that I'd shut it down, but I'd shut it down.
Yeah, you gotta shut it down. Duh. So, yeah, you know, the other thing is obviously, again, we're talking about, you know, he scores well from an over under. He scored from an over, double
right.
over last year. But literally, the one weakness, the one flaw in his game would be going to get someone from space. That's where I think he struggles.
Yes, I agree.
Cool.
He needs you coming at him.
Yes.
at him.
Yes. So the last match we're going to talk about, Gross over Micic. I thought it was a very dominant performance by Seth Gross. You know, I think really that weight class, in my mind, has three guys who are competing for titles this year, and that's, in my mind, Gross, Brock, and Micic. And man, as good as he looked, I gotta think no one's beating Seth Gross this year.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you, but I would not have 3 days ago. Micic is one of my favorite non-Ohio State wrestlers. I think he's an animal. And I was surprised to watch him, you know, essentially get kind of, I wouldn't say dominated.
It was kind of dominant.
He got controlled. I mean, it was.
I don't know, Tommy.
He
never really got close to scoring. And at no point in that match,
yep.
whether from top, bottom, or neutral, did he really get anything that Gross didn't want him to.
Yeah, it surprised me. It really did. So,
yeah.
So with that being said, I you got to give Gross. And Gross, what is his record versus Brock?
I don't think he's ever lost to Brock.
Right, I don't think so. It's 2-0, I think,
yeah.
is what it is.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever lost to K. Brock, so, man.
Right.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a
set. Well, I mean, he had the title. He had
Jack
the title.
Jackrabbits, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, he
Jack
did. He Rabbit. Blew it against
oh, no.
Corey Clark. Man, so he could be going for a second title already.
That's right.
Damn it,
so, yeah, very impressive.
All right. Okay, so next we wanted to, you know, and there's nothing really spectacular that I wanted to highlight here, but Rutgers and Mizzou both held outdoor duels with really solid crowds. Rutgers got the win over Maryland, and Mizzou got the win over Illinois. And I guess I just wanted... Go ahead.
I think that softball venue that they used was outstanding.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really cool venue. Obviously, logistically, you can't do that at every school, but, man, if you could have... By the way, the softball stadium is next to the football stadium, right?
So
they kind of got the spillover.
The softball stadium is actually on the opposite side of the Hearn Center. So there's the Hearn Center, which is the old, you know, the old basketball. So now it is wrestling, volleyball,
uh-huh.
and indoor track are there. So it's the football stadium, then the Hearns, and then the softball's in the back parking lot of that. And yeah, it was a good setup, you know. And I think they sold out what they wanted to, but you know, I think they could probably put a few extra bleachers on, kind of like the outfield ish. Part there, you know, in the inner outfield to even create a larger opportunity for fans to watch.
Yeah, thought it was a great venue. I liked the setting. I saw some good aerial photos and stuff like that. I was impressed.
Yeah, and so nothing too great, nothing too bad from Mizzou. Obviously, that's the team I care about the most. You know, they wrestled kind of like I thought they were going to. The Ironman match was insane. You know, he was trying to use the new rules a lot, and he ended up getting a fall, and then they reviewed it, and the fall was taken away. I mean, Tommy, these guys were already there. They were off the mat. They were done. And then Illinois protested, and they had to come back onto the match and, like, start wrestling again. It was
That's
bizarre.
Crazy.
Yeah, seriously.
That's great.
So, big ups to those guys. Outdoor match. Let's go Daktronics Open. And I think why this one is so fun, well, there were some good matches, but
The amount of high school guys, I mean, it's awesome, man. And I think we're going to keep seeing, don't you think we're going to keep seeing more of this?
Yeah, and I don't see why not, you know, especially when they're as good as McKee right. and they're as good as Stevenson. I see absolutely no reason why they can't wrestle in a college open tournament.
No doubt. I think we're going to see a lot of it. Plus, these guys, you know, it's going to become an ego thing. It's just going to become like the in thing to do.
Is it going to be like the early commit?
It is going to be like the early commits.
Yeah, no, I see that same trend actually because some of my guys, Tommy, approached me, Bill, why don't we do that next year?
Right.
I'm thinking, man, right. It ain't for everyone, but if a handful of you guys want to go, I would go, you know, I mean, especially for me, you know, there's some that are mainly D2, D3, and you know, junior college that might have a super high level of competition that are a lot closer than some of the other tournaments we travel to, so...
Right, exactly. That's cool.
Yeah, I may not be opposed. Gable, he didn't wrestle anyone that was that tough, but he's still a high school kid, and he just made it look just so easy.
No doubt. I mean, yeah, I want to see him get tested against a college guy, but we can't.
Who's going to test him?
We can't make that.
Who do you think? Let's
take a list of guys that you think would beat Gable, but could beat Gable in college. Obviously, Snyder,
Coon.
Adam Coon.
That's it.
No, there's a couple others. I'm just drawing a blank.
Who, Tanner Hall or Nick Nevels? They ain't beat them. Come on, Jacob. Maybe Jacob Casper might throw something tricky at him.
Yeah, I think that those might be the two. I think someone like Nick Nevels could give him a go.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't think – so Nick Nevels, he's never wrestled freestyle really, right? So we wouldn't have seen him at UWB Juniors or anything.
No.
Dang.
But, yeah, he looked great. And then McKee Wrestling, you know, it's not surprising what happened to him. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think he's – you know, sky's the limit for him. But when you watch his style, when you watch him wrestle in Fargo and get all those high-scoring matches and giving up a lot of points, it's not surprising that – in a collegiate match, he would get exposed in the beginning of his, you know, evolution as a college wrestler.
Well,
you think?
And Lezak is not like he's not just anybody on top. I mean, you could argue that Lezak is the best top wrestler in the country too.
Yeah, and McKee's just not stingy in terms of giving up points. He's just not a stingy wrestler. He's scrappy as all get out, and he's great, but he's not a stingy guy. So yeah, that combination. I just wasn't that shocked by it. And it doesn't even change my opinion of the type of career I think he can have.
Yeah. Okay, let's go. Obviously, I think Minnesota's excited about that prospect. They got some – man, Minnesota's high school is really good, so they got some really good recruits. Let's go Red over Thorn, and it was the first victim of the danger rule. I guess I got to say, I watched some other matches where – the refs didn't even start counting, and I thought they probably should have been counting, right?
Right.
So this was the only one that, and I watched, I don't know, 20 matches from last weekend, 25 matches. It wasn't like I watched hundreds, so I did watch a handful. But I thought the three count was pretty damn fast. I don't know, am I off? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I guess I want to have two discussions relating to this, but the first one is, yeah, I thought it was pretty fast. I don't agree with how they called it, and if he in fact called it correctly, then I don't like the rule the way that it's being, you know, applied.
And,
you know what I mean? So,
yeah, and why did he hold it afterwards? That was pretty weird, right?
You know, and I was so excited about this rule, Ben, because it will get rid of all the skank scrambles. But the problem is, you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
But the problem is that it's also going to do what it did to that was a completely normal scramble. That guy was not trying to stalemate the position. He was trying to keep himself from losing in overtime.
Yeah.
And was a last-ditch effort.
Yes.
And so that's where, you know, you called this very early on, as did a number of other people, that this is going to be misinterpreted, misconstrued, misapplied, and we're going to end up hurting ourselves more than helping ourselves. And after watching that, it's like, you know, I mean, if we're going to see that enough to talk about it once a week, then yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if that was in the NCAA quarterfinals, I mean, that would
people
be
are flipping out. I mean, and that's the type of, you know, those two could be in the NCAA quarters. And I really thought that, you know, by the time the ref got to three, I didn't think he was on his back. I mean,
So you think, given, because you've read the rules more closely than me, you've talked about this more than I have.
Yeah.
Do you think that the ref applied the rules as they're stated properly?
Now I'm going to watch it. I'm literally clicking over to watch it again to make sure I remember it correctly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so I guess, you know, like I said, so in other matches I don't remember the exact phrase of it, right? But it's something like you have to be held on your back, and then once you're held on your back, or kind of a semi-control has been established, then the referee will say, he'll go ahead and say danger, and then start counting to three. And so when I watch this one, I'm clicking on to watch it again just to make sure I don't put my foot in my mouth, because this is what I remember from a couple days back. But I thought it was like as soon as he got in on the shot, that ref was like just started counting. And then I thought by the time the referee got to three, I thought he was already off his back. So and then you know, he continues to hold it, which you're not going to hold that unless it's right there. One, boom. So this guy is like right away. And then, yeah, he starts counting damn near right away as soon as the shot happens.
Right.
And then I feel like Tommy Thorne is off of his back by the time the three count happens. And then he's holding the takedown, which I don't know why you would hold the takedown when there's no exposure, right? Because the only reason in an overtime match you would hold the takedown is if there was a threat of being pinned, which if you're not counting back points, there's no threat of being pinned. So, yeah, I don't know. I hope it's not applied like this. That was like lightning quick. And I thought he was off his back. So, yeah, I hope we don't see this type of thing too often.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, it settles itself out a little bit where it's being applied correctly. But I think, you know, the initial reaction you had, Ben, was there's too much subjectivity.
Yeah.
You know, and people will kind of manipulate it and just create a whole new game around it.
Yep.
And so I see that happening. You know what stinks, though, is I watched 7 or 8 All-Star matches, and I didn't really see it influenced that much. You know
no.
what I mean? So I thought, it's a good thing. Kind of, if anything, people, you know, the one thing that we can't ever quantify, Ben, you have to give this a little credit, is that how many skanky little scrambles are we not seeing? Are we not seeing because they now know that will get them in trouble?
But I don't think you would, because I think in that scenario, if you're gonna try a terrible scramble, right, you're still gonna try it for 3 seconds, because whether you give up the takedown without trying or whether you give up the takedown after you try it, what's the difference?
That's fair.
I think you would at least try it. And then, you know, even if you get, because now recall that the neutral danger zone is at 90 degrees, right? And not 45. So you could be at 70 degrees and you could be giving up the neutral zone danger, but not be giving up back points, which is like super bizarre to think about that those are not the same criteria. I mean, it's like really hard. And that's like when I'm watching the Tommy Thorne one, it's like, I don't think he's even at 90 degrees by the time they get to three. I don't think he's there at all.
Right.
Okay, let's hit real quick. Let's hit these Eastern Michigan results. I got a workout to go do. You got work to do. I'm leaving for Asia today, so I think thinking maybe we'll definitely get one podcast in next week, and then maybe fight week we don't do it.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, the Michigan State Open, not bad for early season competition. A couple of the brackets, you know, 57 wasn't bad. 74 was pretty solid. Some of these brackets, maybe not so tough. You know, I guess the one that I was the most excited for was Justin Oliver beat Ryan Deacon. I wanted to see how Ryan Deacon looked. You know, he kind of busted onto the scene, made the junior world team, took a junior world silver medal.
Silver. Yeah,
and you know, he looked good in this Oliver match. Oliver hit a couple standing Grambies to get out of a few scrambles. There was even one scramble I sure thought Deacon was going to get him, and then Oliver ended up getting the takedown, and that ended up being the winning takedown of the match. But good match. I think Oliver's ranked 7, I believe, and so you know, that gave us a good barometer of where Ryan Deacon's at.
Yeah, no, I think he's right where at least I thought he was going to be. After watching him at Junior Worlds, really it was the first time I watched him, so not surprised. Pretty tough.
Yeah, and then you know the other big match that we had was obviously the
Massa Valencia,
and I think Massa's beat him every single time, and he kind of, I don't know, did he beat him? You want to say easy this time?
Yeah, he looked great, man. I mean, I watched the whole Valencia match, and then I saw a few highlights. How about him hitting that Russian overhook slide by? Slick, man. I mean, he just, you know, more than just hitting a nice move, it just that illustrates to me the feel he has for the sport.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, quite honestly, man, I mean, when Vincenzo Joseph beat him, to me it was an upset. I don't know about you.
Me too. If you tell me Chenzo and Massa are wrestling tomorrow and you want me to bet, I'm probably going to bet on Massa.
Same here.
So,
Massa gave Imar some scraps.
Yeah, I mean, Massa's real deal, Bubba. He ain't messing around.
Yep.
And so, yeah, you know, I think, man, do I want to call Massa the favorite? I kind of do. And then the other thing is, I'm kind of
over Vincenzo, not over Imar.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And Imar looked like an animal at Missouri, actually. So I would go Imar, Massa, Chenzo in my head right now. You know, the other thing is, man, Anthony Valencia, I hate saying like he's a disappointment, but this guy took 4th at the U.S. Open as a high school senior. And so for him to maybe not be making that much progress, I guess I'm kind of disappointed that I thought he might be farther along. I thought he might be the one. Remember, he beat Imar twice or three times maybe. To make a junior world team a couple years back. So, you know, I thought this was a guy who would be challenging for a title, maybe a little tighter than losing 6-0 here. And so, you know, I don't know what his deal. Maybe it's he's cutting too much weight. I'm not. I've been told this could just be a folk style.
You know how guys they don't quite have the folk style thing dialed in.
Yeah.
But they're freestyle animals, and then you also see it vice versa. So it could just be one of those things too.
Sure. All right, Tommy. Well, that's really all I got. It was fun.
Yeah, man.
First weekend of wrestling. We got to watch some decent stuff. Hopefully.
It's ramping up, brother.
We're ramping up here.
I mean, within a month, we're gonna have to cut things out of the podcast and instead of trying to fill things in.
Yeah, absolutely.
All
right. Well, I will let you go. And next time we talk, I will be in Asia, Tommy. So I'll see you later, buddy.
Have a great retirement tour. I'll talk to you soon.
See ya. You are listening to the T. Rowan Fungi Show, and it is brought to you by Defense Soap. Defend what you've built. Tommy, I got to say, I tried these products. He shipped me a box. I love them. I've had, if you know me, you know I've had ringworm issues for a long time. So I'm looking forward to putting these in my repertoire and hoping the ringworm does not come back ever.
No doubt, Ben. And to top that off, the company was created by wrestlers. Guy Seiko wrestled at Cleveland State University. His son was an All-American at Virginia, so these people really get it. They know what the wrestling community needs.